Where the Bodies Are Buried contains graphic depictions of violence that some listeners may find disturbing. Discretion is advised.
My name is Phil Chalmers, and this is Where the Bodies Are Buried.
The devil is on my side, getting you away from me. That devil wastes no time, he gonna set me free.
Joining me is my producers, Adam and Samantha.
On this episode of Where the Bodies Are Buried, we'll be speaking to Brian Britton, the man known for the 1989 Britton family murders. We'll try to figure out what led to these horrific acts and what he was thinking while murdering his family, including his innocent 8-year-old brother. Now, after serving 32 years in prison, he may soon be a free man. But if his sister, the only surviving member of his family, has any say, he'll be locked up for life.
Brian Britton is a New York State teen killer.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from...
Brian.
Brian.
What's up, Phil?
Brian, what's up?
Not much. How you doing?
Is it okay if I record you?
Yes, it is.
Brian, when I first started doing this work I want you to know, look, maybe you don't know this, but I started doing this back in 1985. I've been doing this for 35 years, a long time. And I started working with troubled teens. I started working with teenagers who were incarcerated for rape and murder. And then I started really paying attention to teen murder, teenagers who committed murder. And then, of course, in the 90s, it became teenagers who shot up schools, right?
Right.
You were one of those early cases. You and I didn't know each other back then. But 1989, you came across my radar. So, Brian, you were incarcerated in a New York State penitentiary. What are you incarcerated for? Why are you in prison?
I'm in prison right now because in 1989, I had a disagreement with my parents in the morning, and I ended up shooting my mother, my father, my little brother, and my sister.
And three of those family members died, and your sister survived.
Yes.
So, I mean, the first question that everybody's going to ask is, if you had a disagreement with your parents, why did you shoot your siblings?
Believe it or not, my sister, for, I'm going to say, the last 2 or 3 years before I got locked up, me and her did not really have a good relationship, mm-hmm. and a lot of the trouble that I got into with my parents was pretty much started by my sister.
Wow.
She did. She played a lot into... a lot of the trouble I got into, you know, it was just like...
She played into it. She played into it.
Yes.
Like she was kind of like an instigator.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, the whole dynamics of the household at that time, there was constant fights between my mom and my dad, between my sister and my mother, between me and my mother, and... You know, my sister had the escape of going to college, going to work, but I got thrown under the bus all the time. And, you know, I didn't have that escape. I had to be home. I had to watch my little brother, you know, after schools and stuff like that. So I didn't have the opportunity to physically remove myself from the family situation at times, even though I did try.
Yeah. So basically, to sum it up, it was an unstable home. That would be accurate, right, Brian? Your home is not stable.
No, it was not.
And so you had a lot going on. You were fascinated with guns and the military and Soldier of Fortune. Kind of talk about a little bit of your childhood and how did you get fascinated into these things like weapons and guns and, you know, military?
You know, as I discussed with you before, I grew up in it was a very patriotic family. It was a very military-minded family. You know, I had a lot of family members that served in the military for the United States. My dad was a vet. And from a young age, from a very young age, I think like from 5 on, I used to go hunting all the time. I went hunting with my father. But I also got into competitive shooting. So I spent a lot of time target practicing, and you know, I mean, it's especially in today's society where firearms are like a big taboo. Back when I was growing up, it wasn't a taboo. You know, it was, you know, people collected cars, people collect stamps. Some people, you know, are fascinated with models. I like firearms, and
but you also got kind of attracted to the military and the Soldier of Fortune magazines, correct?
Yes. But again, you know, I mean, just the whole 80s thing. You know, the Cold War was going on. It was a good thing to serve in the military. You know, I looked at people like my grandfathers and my uncles and my father who served in the military, and I wanted to join the military. And everything that I did at home was geared towards eventually finishing high school and getting into the military. So, you know, I will admit I wore a lot of camouflage and I had a lot of assault gear and, mm-hmm. you know, I did have a lot of military paraphernalia in the house.
You were also infatuated with a military person. Who was the military person that you really liked?
Oh, you talk about Rambo?
Yeah, Rambo. You know, they talk about Rambo about you. Were you really into Rambo? They said your nickname was Rambo. Is that true?
When you get arrested, they ask you, you know, like, do you have any nicknames, any names that people call you? Mm-hmm. And in high school, people used to call me Rambo because I was always dressed. You know, I always wore fatigue pants and patriotic T-shirts, and they knew mm-hmm. I did a lot of hunting. And so I didn't think nothing of it. I said, yeah, you know, my nickname's Rambo in high school, and I had a lot of photos, and I had, like, all three of the Rambo movie posters, and, mm-hmm. you know, I had, like I said, I had a lot of military paraphernalia going back from World War II to Korea to Vietnam.
Okay.
And
at the time of this crime, Brian, it was March 22nd, 1989. You were 17 years old. You were a sophomore in high school. And your parents were Dennis and Marlene. We think they're right. in their 40s. And Jason, your little brother, was 8. And Sherry right. was 12. There's two questions I want you to answer. Why the shotgun as the weapon of choice instead of a knife or anything else? And number two, what happened that day, March 22nd, that occurred? Why a shotgun? Why a shotgun, and why did that happen?
I think it's easier just to explain what led up, and that might kind of make what I'm about to say a little bit easier. I had stopped taking Ritalin in December 31st, 1988. So January 1st, 1989 was the first time that I had no Ritalin in my system since I was like 5 years old. I went through, I don't know, 2-3 weeks after I had stopped taking Ritalin, I was fine. And then I started getting all the symptoms, you know, the side effects, the withdrawal effects from the Ritalin, rapid mood swings and everything. But again, you know, it was the family household situation. Mm-hmm. It was everything else that led up to it. And then the day before, March 21st, normal day, came home from school, I grabbed my 20-gauge Mossberg shotgun. I went out, I hunted for small game for, I think, an hour and a half, 2 hours. I came home, cleaned my shotgun like I normally do, and I reloaded it. Every gun that was in my bedroom that was hanging on the wall was fully loaded. I always kept them fully loaded. And then I went down to my girlfriend's house later on that night, and after only being down there a short time, my mother called, and it was a rehash of the same old argument that had been going on. What are you doing? I need you home. Get home. So I come home, and I got home around 8 o'clock at night, and it was just the same old argument, I mean, that I was always having with my mom, you know, about not being responsible, you're never home, you know, if you don't like it here, get out.
Yeah.
So I went to bed, and the next morning I woke up, and when I got up, I mean, I wasn't out of bed 20 seconds, and I start getting yelled at, and I just snapped.
This is happening early in the morning?
Yeah, it was at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I always got up early.
What happened?
Okay, so, you know, arguing with my mother, I snapped. And the first thing I in my mind, I was like, you know what? There's only one way I'm going to get anybody to listen to me. And I went and I grabbed a shotgun. And it just happened to be the shotgun that I used the day before to go hunting with. And I went into my parents' room, and I was going to talk to my father. I mean, me and my father, even though we had an abuse, you know, even though it was an abusive household, I'd like to say that me and my father still had a really good relationship.
Okay.
Even though it was abusive, we did connect on a lot of different levels.
Okay.
So when I got into the bedroom where my father was, I started thinking, what the hell are you doing? I have a shotgun in my hands. You know, even though I want to talk to him, he's probably going to whoop my ass. So, you know, just thinking, I dropped the shotgun. And when I dropped the shotgun, my father woke up. I immediately snatched the shotgun back up. And just out of fear, I fired. And I ended up shooting my father twice. And when I left
you have 1 minute remaining.
Was he in bed, Brian? Oh, was he in bed?
Yes.
You shot him twice
in bed? I'm
going
to call you back.
Okay. Can you call me back?
I'm going to call you right back, okay?
Call me right back. We'll pick up right where you left off.
Okay.
Thanks. Talking to Brian Britton. Teen killer, family annihilator. Killed his father. Killed his mother. Killed his little brother, 8 years old. Shot his sister, who was 12, Sherry, and she survived. She woke up in the hospital, didn't know what happened to her.
So this happened in the 80s. Talk to us about how long Brian Britton's sentence is. You know, this happened a while ago. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, back in the 80s, they were just starting to have a lot of this teen murder, teen violence. And some of the states were still had sentences where teenagers were sentenced to very little time. Some of them got released when they were 21 years old. At this time, though, in New York, he got 25 to life, while a lot of the teenage killers today are getting life without parole. So he's up for parole after 25 years, and he's been up for parole several times now. He's got his next parole hearing November of 2021, so possibly when this airs, he could be out of prison.
We see this in a lot of cases, but it looks like Brian's upbringing was pretty messed up.
I think Brian grew up in a typical dysfunctional home. A lot of people don't see the instability. A lot of people don't see the dysfunction unless they live inside the house. I would venture to guess that a lot of people were shocked that this crime happened, thinking from what they saw of the family, they looked pretty normal. He blames his sister for some of these crimes. I think Brian's trying to deflect as much as he can from this crime. He's trying to lessen the severity of the crime and lessen his involvement in it. So, you know, he's blamed his father, he's blamed his sister, blamed his mother. I'm not sure if I'm buying it all, but it's pretty typical of a killer who, especially one who might be getting out, is to deflect and try to blame others. When we return, we're going to get back on the phone and talk more about his violent crimes and try to find out why would he do something like this. If you're looking for more serial killer and true crime content, check out my YouTube channel at True Crime Phil. We are speaking with Brian Britton, who killed his mother, father, and younger brother back in 1989. Now we are going to hear the details of the morning he committed these horrible crimes.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from
Brian.
All right, so you woke up, you walked into your parents' bedroom. Was your mom and dad in the bedroom?
Just my dad.
Just your dad. You dropped the gun, but you picked it up and you reacted and bang, bang. Shot him twice. He was laying in bed, and I guess he is now deceased.
No, he was still alive.
Okay, talk us through it.
Okay, then I left the bedroom and was immediately confronted by my mother. I ended up shooting her twice. She was deceased at the time, you know, with the shots. And then my sister was right there as well, and all I saw was a movement. She threw something at me. I turned and I shot her twice.
Okay.
And then it was like I kind of like snapped out of it. I kind of like came to, and it was like, oh my God, what the hell? But I don't remember seeing my little brother. And so I went to look for Jason. You know, I had no intentions of shooting my little brother. And I'm looking for him. I can't find him. And I'm like, where did he go? And I went to go check in our bedroom again, because that was the last place I saw him. And I heard a noise behind me, and I spun just on pure reflex. I spun and I fired, and I had shot Jason. And, you know, I only shot him once. But like I said, it was an accident.
Was that in your bedroom? Did you guys have the same bedroom?
Yes.
And was it in the bedroom?
He was. Yeah, I don't know where exactly he was hiding. In there, I'm assuming it was around where the bed, his bed, and the one dresser was. There was like a little alcove there.
So he jumped up, and you just turn and pow.
Yeah, and it was a reaction shot. I didn't mean to hit Jason. It was right after that what happened set in, and
you were like, I can't believe what I just did.
Yes, and I ran next door to my grandparents' house, and I had them call the cops.
So wait a minute, your dad, you shot him twice. You said he was still alive. Where did you shoot your dad? Do you know? I mean, have you heard, like, when it's all said and done, where was he shot at?
He was shot in the chest and the face.
Did he die then in bed then?
Yeah, he was he had passed away before they could get him out of the house.
Okay, and then mom passed away. Where was she shot at?
She was shot in the chest and the head.
And how about your sister? She survived. Where was she shot at?
Chest and head.
And then your little brother, where was he shot one time?
Just in the chest.
And that's no joke. You have a shotgun. So no matter what caliber the shotgun is, you know as well as I do, if you're a hunter, it's dangerous, right? So you went next door, you can't believe what you've done, you talk to your grandparents, the police come and get you, you're arrested that day.
Yes.
Are you thinking to yourself, I can't believe what I just did?
Yeah, I was, don't get me wrong, I've had over 32 years to really, I mean, it has really sunk in, and it was just like, I can't believe that I did that. It was just...
Can't believe it.
I didn't see. If you had asked me back then, if you had put a gun in my head back then and said, "Yo, do you think you would ever do something like that?" I would tell you no.
Yeah. So Brian, this was 32 years ago.
Yes.
You were convicted of second degree murder, sentenced to 25 to life. You've been up for parole several times. There's a very good chance you are going to be paroled. Your sister. Do you still talk to your sister?
On and off over the years, we've had contact. I wrote to her shortly after I first got locked up and when I first came to prison.
Yeah.
I've talked to her several times on the phone over the years.
Are you talking right now?
No, I haven't. Honestly, I haven't talked to her in probably 10 years.
How long ago did she do the TV show Evil Lives Here?
I want to say it was either 2016 or 2017.
Okay, well, I watched that show, and she seems like she's very upset with you. So, like, she's not on board with you. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So your father was an alcoholic, so was mine. You were abused. So there's some mention of cracked ribs and broken nose. Does that make any sense to you? Talk about that.
It was a very hands-on upbringing. The smallest thing in our household could literally get you a busted jaw, broken nose, broken ribs. I've had them all.
So your father, least, your father was physical with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he was.
So, Brian, you ran next door, you say, and I think the report says you had said there was a masked intruder that shot your family. Is that what you told your grandparents? Is that what you're going to try to say to get out of this?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't want to get in trouble, and I figured if I told them that, it would get the police there quicker. In all reality, what it did was it destroyed any credibility that I might have had,
right.
And it caused them to delay long enough that, you know, my father passed away, and it took them so long getting to Jason that from complications, he passed away as well.
Wow. So at the time, the only person that was deceased was your mom, and your dad and your brother and your sister were all still alive.
Yep.
Wow. Were they all alive when they were taken out of the home, or did they?
The only two that came out that morning that were still alive when they put them on the ambulance was Sherry and Jason.
Your brother and your sister.
Yep.
Oh my God. Phil, can you walk us through how his crimes all went down again? What's crazy is that these all happened early in the morning, which is just a small detail that seems unique.
You know, when you hear about these crimes, you glance over the headline and you move on to the next news story. But if you could imagine the chaos in the home that morning, it's 5 a.m. Everyone is sound asleep. Brian walks into his parents' bedroom at 5 in the morning. He shoots his dad twice in bed. He claims he dropped the gun, he was afraid, and he shot him by accident. I'm not sure that's how it went down, but that's Brian's story. He then shot his mother, and then he shot his sister, and he claims he accidentally shot his little brother. After talking to these types of teen killers, a lot of times once they shoot the first family member, they just continue to shoot everybody in the house. And I kind of believe that's how it went. He's claiming he accidentally shot dad and his little brother, who was 8 years old. But he never did say shooting the mother and the sister was an accident. So, according to his story, he purposely shot mom and sister. I mean, it's possible that he was startled, scared, surprised by his little brother hiding in the bedroom. It's possible that he was startled and he shot him by accident. He shot everybody twice. His MO of all the other shootings, he shot every family member once in the chest and once in the head. Just bang, bang. I mean, you're shooting to kill someone when you shoot them once in the chest with a shotgun at very close range and once in the head. He only shot his brother once in the chest. So is it possible that he was startled and accidentally shot his little brother? Yes. But again, when I look at these cases, and I've been studying these cases for 35 years, typically, once they shoot the first family member, they just shoot everybody else. This case has a lot of similarities to another New York family murder case, the DeFeo murders. You may know it more as the Amityville Horror House, where Ronald DeFeo shot his entire family. That also happened in New York, and it's very similar to the Britton case.
So his sister, the only survivor, I mean, it can't be a big surprise. She wants nothing to do with Brian.
Yes, when we have surviving family members, typically, they're not on board with the killer in prison. You know, this person tried to kill me. And typically that ends the relationship. So it's pretty rare that we see a surviving family member supporting the killers in prison. So it is no surprise that the sister wants nothing to do with Brian. She does not want him to get paroled. She speaks to the parole board every time he's up for parole to try to tell them to deny his parole. Quite frankly, she claims she's afraid he's going to get out and finish the job. Next, we're going to speak to Beth Creel, a grief counselor specializing in PTSD, death, and loss. I'm joined by Dr. Beth Creel, a certified grief specialist specializing in death, loss, and PTSD. Hey, Beth, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
What is your daily grind, Dr. Creel? What do you do day to day?
I work with individuals that have been experiencing medical trauma and physical trauma. As a grief counselor, we look at grief in the form of any kind of change that occurs. So whether it's a medical illness, wherever you go from one state of mind to another or one state of being to another, we refer to that as grief when there's trauma associated with it.
So Dr. Creel, what do you think made Brian Britton snap, as he put it?
Well, I think that the word snap is an interesting term, Phil. You know, we think of a tree twig snapping, and actually it breaks. When something snaps, it breaks. When we look at Brian and we ask ourselves what made him snap, I really have to ask myself what made him break. What caused him to have this insurmountable amount of trauma in his life that caused him to suddenly wake up one morning and break? And so when I ask myself that, I look at the abuse that he speaks of and what that has meant to him and the role that has played in his life.
So Beth, a lot of people ask me this question, and I can't wait to ask you this. This is something I've been wanting to ask you. So they ask me this all the time. Are killers made or born? Or they usually ask it, is it nature or nurture? When it comes to juvenile homicide and teen killers, even school shooters, are these killers born or are they made?
I think that is such a convoluted question, Phil. It's a very good question. And it's a question that I wish we could have a clean answer to, but I think it's a combination. You know, there's a famous theorist, and he talks about a blank slate. And he talks about children coming into this world as a blank slate, and we basically can do whatever we want with them. But other people would argue with that theory, and they would say there are people that come into this world with predisposed characteristics and traits. And so are we nurturing those traits if they're negative and they're violent? Are we nurturing those traits if they're about compassion and love? It would be so nice if we could answer that. But I think it's too complicated a question because there's so many layers to it.
Do you think Brian Britton's history of abuse with his dad made him turn violent and kill his family?
I think that Brian, it sounds to me that Brian had his breaking point and that there was a culmination of him having to put up with and deal with and cope with abuse. And it sounds like it was quite often. I thought it was very interesting when I heard him speak and he spoke about still having a loving relationship with his father. And there's an interesting theory in psychology that a child would rather have negative attention than no attention. And so was this the home that he was raised in where he was constantly looked at and abused in a negative manner? And did he all of a sudden one day just say, I've had enough? Interestingly enough, though, those that are abused tend to take out their anger on the individual that's abusing them. But Brian took it out on several members in the family.
Interesting. Do you think stopping Ritalin can have an impact on a teen killer, you know, to make someone violent? Do you think that had an impact on Brian Britton?
I think that the effects of stopping Ritalin can cause some mood changes for sure. It causes sleep disturbances. And I do think it could play a role with mood and with irritability and low levels of patience. But if you take that just alone without a history of abuse, I think it's probably a benign side effect that can be handled.
So Dr. Creel, last question for you. Do you think Brian Britton could be rehabilitated and could he be set to be freed into society? Could he make it?
I probably, Phil, in all honesty, would have to look at what kind of treatment he had. I'd have to look at how he dealt with the trauma. There were parts of his discussion where I was confused because he said there was no intention, but then it sounded as if there was a tremendous amount of intention. And so I would want to be able to speak with somebody, or I would trust the professionals that have been working with him. The key with abuse is that, you know, we can be abused almost every day of our lives, right? Somebody can cut us off on the freeway. Somebody can say a nasty thing to us in the store. The key here is that he doesn't snap or break again.
Well, Dr. Creel, you've contributed a lot to my podcast this year. We are so appreciative of you taking the time. I know you're busy. Be safe out there, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
You too, Phil. Thanks. Have a good one.
Are you remorseful for your crimes, Brian?
Yes. It's been hard over the years. I mean, like, you know, there isn't a day that goes by when I don't think about what happened, where I don't think about them, holidays. It's, you know, I mean, even just facing my family today that come up, they visit, you know, they still take my phone calls. They still write me. They still send me emails. You know, I mean, the family that I still have left, they are like, they're troopers. They're above and beyond, you know, and I love them. And it's just, it really is that family bond. And it's, you know, it's like, well, we'll get over it, you know, and it's, but it's hard. It's hard for them, you know, because I don't know what other people that are in jail tell you, but anybody will tell you that your people, anybody that you talk to out on the street, they're doing time right along with you.
Yeah.
And, so, you know.
So, Brian, you have a girlfriend as well.
Yes.
And if you get out, you're going to obviously live with your girlfriend. Is that what your plan is?
Not right off the top, no.
Okay, how old is she and how'd you meet her?
Well, she's 34 right now, and I met her through a friend of mine who left when I was at Fishkill to go to another facility. And in order to keep in contact, he used her. You know, she's a family member of his. So,
gotcha. And you guys kind of got to know each other and started dating.
Yep. We got to know each other through, you know, it was during the COVID lockdown when everything was locked down. Nobody was going to work. So we spent a lot of time on the phone, emailing, and, you know, we just created that bond that was there. But when I
go ahead, Brian.
When I do go home, I plan on staying with my cousin Rebecca.
You're going to stay with a family member. Yes. Look for some work, get some jobs, and you might. Is the girlfriend that you're dating, is she from New York or is she from somewhere else?
Yeah, no, she's from right around the area too. Yeah.
So you could still date her.
Yep, I'd still be able to see her.
If and when you get out, do you think you'll kill again?
No, I had no intentions of killing this time, so it's
not part of you.
No. It's not a part of me. It's not a part of, even though it happened, it wasn't a part of who I was.
Right.
And I don't think that if you actually knew me, it's not there. I could go home today and never see the inside of a jail again.
That's good, man. That's good. I'm going to walk you through, before we wrap up here, my causes, warning signs, triggers of what I teach. And I want to ask, when I list these, I want you to say yes or no. Like, this is part of your life or not, okay?
Okay.
Either no father or abusive father. You have an abusive father. You have an abusive father, so that's yes.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Part of it.
Yeah. Yes.
Unstable home where there's physical, sexual, or mental abuse. Yes or no?
Yes.
So that's two. Victim of bullying. Were you bullied at school at all?
No.
Okay, that's two so far. Obsession with violent entertainment. Were you into violent video games, torture porn, or violence of any kind like that?
Yes.
Were you obsessed with guns, bombs, or knives?
I'm gonna have to say yes to that.
I would say yes to guns. That's four already. Were you suicidal, Brian?
No.
Were you using any kind of illegal drugs or alcohol?
No.
I don't think you wanted to be famous. Were you involved in a cult or a gang? I'd say no.
Nope.
Was anybody, any of your friends saying you should do this, peer pressure from your friends?
Nope.
Were you a spiritual kid?
Nope.
And you think you had any kind of mental illness?
Nope.
So you had four of the causes, which I would say you're in the danger zone. I'm going to read the warning signs. Just again, quickly say yes or no. Were you ever cruel to animals?
No.
Set fires?
I did have one fire started, yeah.
Wet the bed?
No.
Did you draw violent photos and pictures and stuff?
I did have a lot of violent pictures, yes.
Did you take pictures with guns and stuff like that?
No.
Have you made any threats that you were going to kill someone before you did, like your parents or your sister or anybody?
Nope.
Did you do anything violent at school with your artwork or poetry or drawings or, you know, stories, anything like that?
Nope.
Okay, you didn't really have social media back then because you're almost as old as I am. You were definitely into guns and that kind of stuff and war. It talks about the way you dressed, and you were dressing in fatigues and almost like a military gear, right?
Yes.
Were you fascinated with other shootings at the time? Were you fascinated with other school shooters or teen killers or serial killers?
No, actually, you didn't really hear about nothing like that back then.
We didn't, yeah. Back in 89, it wasn't popular, was it?
No, you didn't hear it. We're going to have to continue this tomorrow because I already used up my half-hour phone slot and yep. They're waving me off.
In this last minute, let's just finish up. Let's finish up real quick. What do you think triggered you? Was it the trigger you had was a dispute with your parents, which is one of my triggers, right? Right, Brian?
Right.
Yeah. Brian, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Okay.
We're good, man. You shared your story, and hopefully it'll be a warning sign, a wake-up call to other families and parents.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Let's keep in touch, man, and keep in touch and let me know how you're doing, okay?
All right. I'll talk to you soon, bro.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Phil, do you think Brian Britton should be released from prison?
Yes, I think Brian Britton will be released. If he gets denied parole again, he'll be up for parole again in 2 years. I'm pretty sure he'll be released by 2023. And the reason is he has a pretty clean record in prison. He has a family member he's going to live with. He has a job he thinks lined up. And I think all of those things come into play for parole.
You think it's safe for somebody like Brian Britton to be released?
You know, every killer should not be released from prison. But I think when you've been in prison 32 years, you have a track record of your behavior. And I think the parole board takes a good look at that. And if he has a clean record and he is rehabilitated, then yes, he probably should be released. To me, Brian Britton's a typical family killer who is obsessed with violence. And he told me that he was obsessed with violence. He comes from an unstable home. He has a very dysfunctional family. His father's abusive. He is obsessed with guns, which is a big one. It's a warning sign and a cause. He's obsessed with violent movies. He's got posters all over the walls. He looks up to people like Rambo. He wears camouflage every day to school. So, I mean, he's the kind of kid that would be a ticking time bomb. And of course, he's not telling us of all the conversation and fights he had with his family. But I want to say there was a lot of anger in the home. There was a lot of disagreements in the home. I truly believe they fought a lot. So Brian Britton commits this crime when he's 16 years old, probably sat in the county jail for at least a year, goes to prison at 17 or 18, and he's been locked up now for a total of 32 years. Basically, he has grown up in prison, and he has some hope to get released from prison. There are some people that I would say I don't think he should get out of prison. Brian Britton's not one of them. He seems to have a girlfriend. He has some friends on the outside. He's connected to his family. He's going to go live with his aunt if he gets paroled, and he says he has work lined up. So I really believe Brian Britton will get out of prison, and hopefully he will contribute to society. Thanks for listening to Where the Bodies Are Buried. And remember to subscribe to receive updates on new episodes. This podcast is produced by Grinning Dog Entertainment and Audio Up.